welcome to the Enduro World Series podcast. My name is Rick McLaughlin. Joining me is Ruairi Cunningham. Ruairi, I've got really out of the swing of writing the wee sort of gags I used to introduce you with. So I've had a fairly decent strength coffee this morning. So which one of these do you want? Ruairi Cunningham, like the seagull lifting the whole bag of chips. Ruairi Cunningham, like the heavyset rural taxi driver that you know you've been drunk in front of. Or Ruairi Cunningham, like the torn wiper blade you can't be bothered to mend. Which of those would you like?
I mean, I'll be taking the seagull lifting the whole bag of chips every day.
That's about all.
I'm flattered by the torn wiper blade you can't be bothered to mend. Cheers, Rob.
I only say that because I've got one at the minute. Anyway, that's just about all the creative juices I've had spare this week. It's been mental, hasn't it? It's like we're going away or something soon.
Yeah, you think something was on the horizon, wouldn't you? But yeah, it's been mental, let's be honest. I think, you know, there's a lot of hoops to jump through for going racing this year, just with, you know, COVID lingering, and it's less than a week now until we leave, so...
It's terrifying.
It is terrifying, but we're still finding time to do a podcast for you listeners, so...
It's a little oasis in our week, this, getting to chat to each other about bike racing, because we never get to talk about bike racing to each other any other time.
It's like a little therapy session, isn't it?
But other people get to listen to it. Let's get straight into it. We had the big enormous news at the end of last week about the 2022 season being unveiled. Before we get into that though, I'd like to talk for a second about a couple of other wee interesting bits and pieces, because I think that's quite a big topic that we need to sort of deep dive a bit. But just whenever I'd stopped banging my drum about we've reached sort of peak bike and the sort of ceiling of bike development, we've had a couple of new bikes break cover this week that look a bit different. Three of them, actually. First up, it's the new Santa Cruz Bronson. Santa Cruz, they're really rattling out the high-quality produce at the minute, aren't they? Hot on the heels of, first of all, the all-new Bullet e-bike, and then the new Blur XC bike comes the new Bronson, all the bees. 160mm fork, 150mm rear travel, mixed wheel size for the first time on a bike that they debuted the 650B wheel size on, 27.5, if you're not old-fashioned like me. What do you make of that, Ruairi?
Looks good, doesn't it? I think you look at the numbers, you look at the travel. I mean, that's it's a nice bike. I mean, yeah. There's no
getting away from it.
There's nowhere to really do it justice. I mean, it's just a brand that's keeping their finger on the pulse. They're seeing the trends. They're seeing what people want. And yeah, I mean, 150 rear, 160 front. It gives you that. You know, it's small enough that it's nimble, and it's not gonna seem like overkill at venues or locations that maybe aren't as steep and technical. But you know, if it gets choppy, you know, with a bigger fork and the smaller rear wheel and the geometry they've spec'd it on, it's gonna handle that as well. So just that perfect kind of evolution of a do everything bike that's moving towards the demands of the sport. So good move.
I kind of object to when bike reviews include the word fun, because at the end of the day, they are mountain bikes, aren't they? They're supposed to be reasonably fun things. They're a toy. But I do think that that looks like a bike that would be a lot of fun. I think it looks like a bike that I can see working on all manner of trails and being, as you say, bit more nimble, a bit more playful with a smaller rear wheel than, say, the likes of an all-out like bruiser like the Megatar. It's actually really similar in shape to the latest Nomad. If you're tragic enough like I am to look at sizing charts beside each other, geometry tables, 27.5-inch wheel, 170mm travel is a Nomad. Yet another of their latest launches, Sam Dale, in that... really memorable, really cool little video from Steel City on that one. No, new Bronson. It's an audio podcast. You can't see it. This is kind of pointless, but it's a big thumbs up from us. Looks really, really good. Would you take that over a Hightar in your hypothetical Santa Cruz stable?
Depends. I kind of think
that the Hightar is kind of the ultimate sweet spot for me, and I do like a 29 front, 29 rear, out of habit.
It's a difficult one. How many bikes are we allowed in our Santa Cruz stable?
you're like one and one e-bike, so you'd have a bullet.
Well, yeah, having a bullet. I mean, Gordon Brune's staying. That's a tough one because I feel looking at this, it's, you know, you look at that bike and it is closer to the bullet as far as the direction they're moving in with it. It's slightly less travel, but not hugely so. Or do I mean, obviously we're mega towers this year, so. I'd have to ride them both.
Yeah, we'd have them both. Let's make a little bookmark thing here to maybe on our last week in Italy, let's have a chat about how we're getting on with our bullets and our new Megatars and sort of what we've changed and what's lasted and I'm looking at you here, what you've broken. Next up, a couple of bikes. They're not actually specifically designed for enduro racing, but I do wonder if they both represent platforms, suspension platforms, and sort of general shapes that we will eventually see between the tapes at some stage racing. The Commensal Supreme DH, the latest version of that. I don't want to dwell too much about on downhill bikes because obviously it's not what we're here to talk about, but really, really interesting design. They've moved from a pretty complex high single pivot design to a pretty complex six bar design. It's actually similar to a Felt Equilink. Do you remember those?
I can't say I do, to be honest. That's maybe the first time you've stumped me with some prehistoric knowledge.
I had a very difficult time on a Felt Equilink once that I don't think I can go into here. Do you remember the Meta SX? That was a 180 mil enduro bike that Commensal produced in 2017 that had that high pivot contact system in it. Yuan Borelli all over the ads for it with his top off, strangely enough. I do wonder if that bike was maybe a bit ahead of its time, and then we talked a lot about the sort of new long travel super enduro bikes, and it was like a high pivot sort of trail muncher before people really had gone into the high pivot route.
I think we've seen a lot of this though with bikes, and you know, you mentioned the Meta SX there, but I remember, and this is going back to about 2008-2009, I remember Intense when I rode for them, when I was riding with Nige. And he'd got Intense to produce the Intense slope style, which, you know, if you then saw the direction slope style and the name didn't really fit, but it was a, you know, 160, 170 mil travel trail bike. And he said it was,
I was going to say Nigel Page, renowned slope style rider.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen him do plenty flips right enough, but not intentionally. But yeah, that was like a long travel, slack, effectively do everything bike. But you know, back then I don't even think there was dropper posts, so it just didn't really fit in the demands of the sport at the time. And ultimately, I think the development of that bike was kind of what Nige took towards Nukeproof and was almost like the first rendition of the Mega. And, you know, we look at that now and, you know, they're bringing out the Giga and it's kind of gone the full circle. I think, obviously, the sport's changed, you know, with the introduction of enduro and the demands for these bikes. But also, I think the bigger wheel sizes, the technology with things like dropper posts and updates in geometry and stuff, like, it's all... I think sometimes there'll be a really good idea, similar to the Meta SX or the slope style, that at the time... the rest of, you know, the rest of the industry, the rest of the sport just doesn't have the resources to make work.
Yeah.
And then it's like, look at high pivot dyno bikes. We had them in the late 90s, then they disappeared. And then now 20 years later, I mean we don't want to get stuck on downhill, but I think it's fair to say that pretty much every team that is privateer or doesn't have a bike sponsor chooses to ride a Commensal.
It's the privateer steed of choice, isn't it?
Definitely.
It's the modern day Kona Stab. And I think that I'm just looking at a picture of it, actually. It does look really, really good, that new Supreme. It's definitely a chassis that I could see could be adapted into a shorter travel platform. Maybe hamstrung slightly by the fact that it involves quite a lot of metal in those linkages, and Common Sal famously don't do carbon fibre. And to be honest, their existing Meta platform is the most successful EWS race bike by some margin, thanks to Cecile Ravanel. But one to keep an eye out on. I'm sure if they've got, I saw on Instagram just before we came on this call that Antoine Vidal is racing the World Cup this coming weekend. So you've got a pilot in him who is going to have experience on that downhill bike that can maybe help steer the enduro bike. But that's interesting. Also interesting this week.
I was going to say it's nice to see the it's nice to see them finally unveil it, because every time I saw someone riding it like Omri Perion, all I could think of when they had that like
cover
carpet over the frame, all I could think of is it looked like, you know, when you get a horse in winter when they put the jacket on it because it's cold. I could not see past that. I was like, oh, there's Omri Perion.
I was just about to say how cool I thought that was, because it's like all those like supercars you see, like the spy shots at the Nürburgring, and they've like put some gaffer tape over the headlights or something. You're like, it's quite clever marketing, isn't it? It's like, I remember years ago at a World Cup cross country in Stellenbosch, and SRAM were debuting the Bluetooth shifting on Nino Schurter's bike, and he brought the bike in to get some photos taken or something, and we were all like geeking out around it. And the manager at the time dived in and said, you know, you can't take any pictures off it, you can't take any pictures off it. You're like, well, you've brought it to a bike race, clearly for people to see. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of,
yeah.
I think there's a bit of that. Maybe you're right. Maybe the bike was just cold and they put a jacket on it. But another bit of interesting bike tech stuff this week, the new Scott Spark, the 2022 down country, which I think is just a horrific term.
What's that? What does that mean?
Oh, it's just this fashion of running words together at the minute, isn't it? It's basically a slightly aggressive cross-country bike, I think, is the sort of vibe of that term. Trail bike, I think you'd maybe call it. I don't know. I don't like trail bike in my head is a 120 mil travel bike, but then t-shirts in my head still cost 20 quid and they don't. So I may be dealing old money there. It looks a bit like a Bold, if you ever saw one of those. Have I stumped you again? You ever seen a Bold?
I think you have, mate. It's a bit too much nostalgia for me, but
Scott, it's amazing the stuff I couldn't remember, like actual important day-to-day life stuff, but swatty stuff about felt Equilinks and
truthfully
I could tell you about.
Truthfully, I'm looking at a picture of this Scott in front of me. It doesn't look too dissimilar to a bike they did about 20 years ago, where instead of the shock being inside the frame, it was just behind the seat tube.
The Genius.
Yeah, it's not too dissimilar, is it?
It's similar in profile, certainly. Scott bought a company, Bold. Apologies if I'm wrong about this. I think they're a Swiss brand. They bought them back in 2019. And Bold's, their claim to fame was the entry point for the internal cables. They had air vents to actually cool the shock inside the frame, which I was all about, even if it didn't work.
I don't think you'd go fast enough to cool the shock.
Do you know what? I think I'd go that slowly. That badly that the heat build-up would probably be the same, so
yeah, I was going to say, you maybe not go fast enough to heat the shock up, but conversely, you don't go fast enough to
cool it. To cool it either. It's like driving a Formula One car through LA traffic or something. It needs to be going at a certain speed to cool itself down. And if I'm not doing that, we're in trouble. Twin lock levers, yes, more of a cross country bike, obviously. But again, interesting to see if there is an enduro variant creeps out. I'm sure there will be, because they've clearly spent a lot of time and effort on that design. Right then, enough crystal ball gazing. Let's stop dwelling on possibilities and zero in on some fact. The 2022 Enduro World Series and EWS E season, it's an absolute whopper, isn't it? I don't use the word whopper lightly either there.
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, you know, biggest season to date. I mean, you know, how many races is this? I always lose count. Is that many?
There's loads, absolutely loads. Yeah. We've got
nice accurate number there. There's loads.
There's 13 stops and 4 EWSE rounds and a Trophy of Nations in finale. Should we just let's break it down? Actually, it's break it down. It's a bit. There's a lot to digest. First of all, it's been met with some real enthusiasm online, and thank you to everyone who has left a comment. It feels great for all of us to be emerging from a period of such flux and just global misery of COVID into hopefully our biggest and by far the most wide-reaching season to date. It may seem a little strange talking about 2022 when this time next week we're going to be sat in a van together heading to the 2021 season, but it's only weeks away that we go racing this year. But I also think that here we are. I think if the dates are all locked in, why not go for it? It gives us all something to look forward to, I think, and provides a bit of continuity as well. So let's break down then what that calendar is actually going to look like. We start off with a Tasmanian doubleheader. First one is in Medina Bike Park on the 26th to 27th of March. Now that is going to be a pro-only event. Really, first time we've done that, and apparently that is a pretty burly place to do it.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about Medina, so I am really excited for this one. Good friend of mine, Troy, he goes over there quite a lot from Adelaide.
Casually, just name dropping Troy Brosnan into the podcast.
Yeah, one of my friend, Troy Brosnan. But you know, he feels it's worth the travel to go over there. I think they had the Australian National Championships there. Maybe
they did. Yeah.
But yeah, I've only heard good things about the place. Quite different to Derby, I think. Like much bigger, more remote. When you go to Derby, you think, how could it be more remote? But apparently it is.
It's incredible. I think it's really interesting that it's pro only. This is something that we've been talking about doing for a couple of years, but obviously last sort of couple of seasons have been affected really by the global pandemic and what's feasible and what we can do. But it's a chance for us to get some more racing in the calendar, to visit a bigger, burlier, slightly more aggressive venue. But I also think as well for those who are going to travel to Derby to race themselves, it creates the possibility of a really great trip, doesn't it? You go to Medina, watch the pros, you know, get buzzed off that, then go to Derby, jump on your bike and have a go yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see them being grouped together. Like you say, the pro-only race is something that I think's been on the horizon for a while. I think with the demand of, you know, entries for the EWS series, not just the EWS category, but the 100s and 80s as well. You know, we're at a place now where the sport's really healthy. There's, you know, big demand for spots, and whilst we need to increase amateur participation, we also need to keep pushing the kind of pros and the leading edge of the racers as well. So I'm really excited for it. I think the trails in Medina, you know, big mountain, I think it's high, the trails are technical, fast, so you know, I think it'll be an amazing start to the 2022 calendar, and like you say, then conveniently you know, just across a part way across Tasmania to Derby, which is a venue we know and love. And
Derby's incredible, you know. If you're thinking about taking on a flyaway round in somewhere like Australia, maybe you're in Australia already or visiting that part of the world and this sort of coincides and you could be there on the 2nd or 3rd of April, it's just such an incredible place to visit. Trails are honestly some of the best I've ridden in the world. Everyone is as welcoming as you could ever hope to find. The beer's ice cold, pizza's good, like it just doesn't get much better. Great to be looking forward to Derby as well. After that, another new venue, Nelson, New Zealand.
They seem pretty dialed in. Mark Scott's been there. He told me it was amazing. And obviously, I think we spoke about this on a podcast maybe a month or so ago. But the organisers for the EWS and Nelson held an enduro there quite recently. And yeah, all the riders I spoke to said it was amazing. So they seem to be dialed in. I think the area looks stunning, and I think they've got steep, long technical stages in abundance. So another one that we're looking forward to, and a good way to tie up that first leg of the season.
Yeah, so then after that, after travelling to the other side of the world, you will get to basically step out of your front door the next round of Tweed Valley. Earlier in the year, 4th to 5th of June 2022, that is the first EWSE round as well. So I guess the pressure's on you to get a decent EWSE course together this year to go and better it again next year.
Yeah. It'll be nice to, you know, obviously a big trip for us, the first three races, but yeah, like you say, nice to sleep in one bed for the fourth one, but...
Roll out of bed,
yeah.
mug of coffee in your hand and your slippers on, giving out to people.
That's the way we roll, mate.
Yeah, that big race for the UK calendar, that 4th to 5th of June, the Tweed Valley. After that, we return to somewhere that we have been really looking forward to getting back to, and it's just not been feasible over the last couple of seasons. Pets and Jamnica in Austria, Slovenia. Unique in terms of, and not just mountain biking, I think in terms of cycling in general, in that you cross the border a couple of times during this race. You've got to take your passport with you. 18th, 19th of June. Just absolute hero dirt central, isn't it, Pets and Jamnica? And looking forward to seeing Anne and the team there. Next up is where we are about to drive a van to next week, the Val di Fassa round, Val di Fassa Trentino in Italy, 25th, 26th of June. Lots of big, jaggy, dolomite-y rocks shooting up into the sky. Amazing stages there.
Nice geographical observation there, Rick.
Yeah, painting with words is what I do, mate. Val di Fassa quickly becoming an Enduro World Series classic on the calendar, isn't it?
I've never been, so I'm very excited to...
I always forget you haven't been. Sorry, I'm not needling you about that on purpose, but...
Just rub it in, mate.
I'm interested to get your take on it, because I'm not alone, but everyone else absolutely loves it, so I'm interested to get your take on the stages there. Next up, it's the only actual standalone e-bike round of 2022, Valberg in France. After that, it's back on the big plains and over to the east coast of North America for a block of three races. Whistler in Canada returns.
Is that the east coast?
That's west coast, isn't it? Geographically, I'm all over the shop.
Yeah.
Whistler in Canada returns.
Get the compass
over
out.
To far west. Yeah, bigger plane over to the far west coast of Canada. It's one of those tried and quite trite descriptions of anywhere as the mecca of, but it is the mecca of bike parks, isn't it? It's kind of what every bike park wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Whistler. There's not much you need to say about it. It's the place to go mountain biking, really, isn't it? If anybody that talks about mountain biking, and where would you go? I mean, if you've never been to Whistler, it's probably top of the list, and rightly so. It's a pretty special place.
That's 6th to 7th of August. Then we go to the east coast of North America, in the USA, for the first ever time we've had back-to-back rounds in the US. Burke and Sugarloaf are on there. Really excited to go to both those places. I saw somebody online calling it Beast Coast. I know that's got a really positive reaction in the States. It's definitely, those are shaping up to be two big, big races that I think if you get an entry for one of those, you'd be straight out to buy a lottery ticket after it. 13th to 14th of August for Burke and 20th to 21st for Sugarloaf. After that, we return to Europe and the season starts to wind down and the championships are going to be decided. We have the final EWSE of the year and the penultimate EWS in Crans, Montana in Switzerland, which is somewhere that we're going to for the first time this season, so we'll know a bit more about them. But, I mean, the Valais region of Switzerland has many, many beautiful parts, but I think that's definitely amongst the best. And a good team involved in that one as well, Rory, who you've been working closely with.
Yeah, shout out to the Z-Boys, and excited to see what Crans Montana has to offer, to be honest. I mean, let's be honest, Switzerland's not shy of mountains and beautiful scenery, so Having spoken to those guys, they seem excited about, you know, the Crans Montana event and what they can produce. So we'll find out this year, but, you know, great to see them on the calendar for 22 as well.
I'm predicting lots of stunning views, lots of helicopters, lots of really long stages, and lots of really, really tight corners at the end of very big, fast, rocky straight lines. That's what I'm predicting for there. Lots to look forward to. The EWS final then, so this is where, if we get a nice, big, dramatic season, things will come up to the boil in terms of championships in Ludenviel in France, 24th, 25th of September, right at the end of the summer there. Really looking forward to getting there. Great. I mean, France, if you want to have a well-attended, excited, informed crowd at a sporting event, you hold a bike race in France, don't you? It's the sport is just huge there, and to have that round in the season of championships off, absolutely can't wait. Then, finally, the big one, the one that we hoped was going to happen last season, we couldn't get done. The return of the Trophy of Nations in Finale Ligure, EWSE there as well, 1st or 2nd of October. That's how you end the season, isn't it?
It is, on the beach, in Finale, with the gelato and a pizza. Happy days.
Yeah, listen, we'll talk a lot more about these venues, I'm sure, over the course of the next year or so. But yeah, if you want more information about those events and when entries are going to go live, how you can get involved, head over to EnduroWorldSeries.com, keep an eye on our social media. To be honest, I'm looking at that calendar and there isn't a single one of those that I don't think it's going to be extremely well attended, and entries are going to be highly in demand. So get yourself as much information as you can now so that you're ready for those entries going live. I've just got one more thing to talk to you about this weekend, Rory, and that is Wyn Masters off the GT Factory Racing. He's bringing back his Privateer of the Week award again for 2021. It's back up and running. If you don't know what this is, basically Wyn, famous as a world traveller, someone who races a privateer for years and years and years before making the big time, signing a pro deal. Always very close to the privateer pits, knows what it takes to live out of a van and to wash your underpants in a river. He set up a scheme a couple of years ago where the idea was that each week he would donate $1,000, I think it is, to the privateer that puts in the performance of the weekend, and they can use that money however they want, whether it's paying for travel, tyres, bits, parts, just whatever they need to do. And it's been really well received. I think it's really worthwhile, and it's coming from someone who knows the struggle all too well. We'll just run through some of the 2019 EWS Privateer Award winners. I mean, it's a who's who, really, isn't it? Can it say Louis Jean Dahl, who's now on that new look French Connection Sun team.
Mm-hmm.
One of Rory's favourite people to mention on the podcast.
One to watch this year. Telling you.
One to watch. Les Ors, it was won by Rafaela Richter. Absolutely one of the race performances of 2019 for me. Absolute barnstormer. She turned up unseated and she was faster than Isabel Cordurier on a couple of stages, keeping her really, really honest whilst overtaking seven or eight people ahead of her on each stage as well. So well deserved that. North Star, it went to Matt Stoddard, one of the UK's finest. And then in Zermatt, it went to Edgar Carballo. And in Finale Ligure Trophy of Nations, it went to Bart de Vogt, who basically, I think, must have had one of the most terrifying days in a mountain bike ever, trying to follow Martin Mays down in Finale. It must have been like falling down a lift shaft at times, but Bart de Vogt won himself a grand for the hassle.
Yeah.
Really, really worthwhile cause, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, great to see Wyn setting this up and giving an opportunity to give back to riders who are sacrificing a lot and quite often working jobs in the off season just so they can go racing in the summer. And I think once you get on a team, I think it's sometimes quite difficult to see the struggles and the kind of what you have to go through as a privateer to not only get to the races, but to try and be competitive and to try and, you know, the riders we're talking about there, they're not just turning up and making up the numbers. They're, you know, they're fighting for podiums, top fives, top tens. They're trying to crack through into, you know, getting a contract and it becoming a job, you know, and get paid for it. So it's great to see, you know, a way of helping those riders out, like you say, whether it's just tires for the event or food for the week or maybe just help them with travel. You know, it gives them something back, and you know, if they have a top 10 result, it might kind of get lost in the grand scheme of things, but it's good to see that they're getting recognised for their performances and being rewarded for it. So yeah, shout out to Wynn for setting it up. I think it's a great cause, and yeah, looking forward to seeing who wins them this year. And you know, you look at some of the names on that, and you know, they've come through, and I think, is it Edgar Carballo? He's on Orbea. You know, Louis Jandal on Sun. You know, it's good to see these riders who were privateers getting the recognition and getting onto teams, and this is a great way to help them do that.
Mountain biking is a fantastic sport. It's our favourite sport, obviously, but it's also a very, very tough sport to compete in. Especially, I guess, at enduro, because, you know, you're out on the bike all day practicing. You've got stages to walk all day. You've then got to, as a privateer, fix your bike, set your bike up, get your kit sorted, do all that stuff, and every little helps. And I hadn't actually realised before we put the script for this podcast together just how sort of, I guess you would say, clairvoyant that 2019 list of winners was as to who is on EWS Premier and Pro teams now. You know, it's definitely a big help for those riders. Check it out. Look for it on GoFundMe. Also, you could use a search engine and just win Masters Privateer Fund. He's just passed, as of this morning, £5,500. And I know he's trying to gun for £15,000 because that's how many rounds he'll be at. So go and give Win a bit of a hand. It could be the price of a cup of coffee. It could be 10 or 20 quid, whatever you can afford to donate. It's a really, really well-deserved fund and something that helps a lot of good people go racing. So, yeah, thanks very much, Rory. We need to go and do 100 million things. You need to go and put some scaffolding in a van, and then if you throw my bike in on top of the scaffolding and do it that way around, that would be really great. And I think I'm going to be down your way on Monday, actually, to weigh camera lenses and stuff like that. So let's have a coffee and a chat then. Thank you very much. You got anything else you want to contribute to this podcast before we sign off?
I'll think of something to say next week when we're together in Italy.
Has this been the oasis in your week that you hoped it would be?
No, because now it's coming to an end, and I know what, I've got a tab at my computer, which is my email inbox, and I can just see inbox and in brackets the number of emails that I've now got to read, and it's doubled since we've been on this call. So
it's like an old-fashioned telephone. Like the numbers are just rolling around. Yeah, let's do next week. We'll be coming to you from sunnier climes, hopefully in the Dolomites, maybe with an espresso, maybe with a gelato, and let's talk then. Rory, thanks for your time as always. See you next week.
Cheers, right.